this letter. It was written 20 years ago, written by a girl whose face I know. Still I wonder, well, maybe I'm not as good as I thought. It said things of peace, things of beauty, things of love, they elude me. Maybe I'm not as good as I thought. I thought I'd find when I said no, on a clear day, branches of snow, a window.
I dream of peace. By Deborah Penberthy. Welcome to the Qumran Report. May the peace and blessings of the life-giving creative spirit be upon you and upon your family. My name is Melvin Ishmael Johnson, coming at you live from Skid Row Studios. And I'm in the studio with my co-host, Earlene Anthony. Our call-in number is 1-800-893-9562. This week on the Qumran Report, we're going to talk about achieving peace in a time of trouble. But first, we have on the line Deborah Penberthy, and she's going to talk about the song that opened the show, I Dream of Peace. Deborah, welcome to the Qumran Report.
Hi, Melvin. Hi, Earlene. Thanks so much for having me. How are you doing?
Oh, just fine. Now, can you talk a little about how did this song, Dream of Peace, come about?
Well, I wrote it a couple of years back when I was going through a really hard time, and I'm a little bit older and hadn't gotten married. I still haven't, but I hadn't found love or peace, but I was still hoping for it. And I needed hope that I would find love and peace, and now I have found love. So in some ways, I think it was part of my journey to where I am today, and I hope it'll help other people reject, you know, that temptation to fall into bitterness or thinking you'll never have the things that you hope for, and hold out for love and peace.
Okay. Now, we will be playing your video at the end of the show, but can you tell us about your upcoming event on June the 27th, the Serious Rabbit Musical, and the July the 1st at the Vortex?
Yeah, so I've written a musical that's also a one-woman show. It's a rock musical, and it's 12 songs and monologues, and it's called Serious Rabbit. So in the show, I play a rabbit. In a world where rabbits have institutions like universities and theaters, you know, if you can visualize, it's kind of like an animated film, but it's a theater piece. And this rabbit is a professor at Weehawken University. And in the story, she starts out wanting to be a hero, but she realizes she has to save herself first. So it's about kind of how she figures out how to navigate that. And I've done some previews of it, and people feel like it's really touching and meaningful, and it's funny. And I hope your listeners can make it out. It's just one show for now, and it's this Saturday at 3 p.m. in Venice at Beyond Baroque. And people can check my website under my stage name. My stage name is Cicada Road. So it's www.cicadaroad. And there they can hear the song that you're playing. And if they sign up for my mailing list, they can even get a download of it. And they can find out all details of the piece. So it's www.cicada, and then road, like a road or path, and they can get all the details about it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you wanted me to talk about the July 1st event?
Yes, the July at the Vortex.
Yeah, so I understand that you have these monthly events called the Tech Talk Retreats for Skid Row Studios.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I'm going to be the featured singer at that, and so that's Wednesday, July 1st from 5:30 to 7:30 at the Vortex on Olympic in L.A., and maybe you can fill people in on about it. I've never had the pleasure of being at one of the events, but I understand it's to help people understand how they can use the studios and build their technology and their businesses.
Okay, and we're looking forward. We're looking forward to that. And thank you very much, Deborah. And we're going to play the video at the end of the show.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Melvin. I really appreciate it. I'm looking forward to seeing you soon.
Looking forward to it.
All Okay, take care.
Deborah Penberthy. Now, I'm delighted to have with us in the studio Pastor Brian and some students from Plaza Union High School. Mm-hmm. Welcome to the Qumran Report.
Thank you very much.
Look, let's go around. Let's go around the table, introduce yourself. Tell us what grade you're in.
Hi, I'm Brandon Bergen, and I'm I just graduated from high school, and I'm 19 years old.
Awesome. Hello, I'm Jack Trinholm. I'm 17 years old, and I also just graduated.
I'm Dante Fox. I'm going to be a sophomore at Placer High School.
I'm Cody Hitchcock, and I also just graduated.
I'm Alfonso Guido, and I'm 18, and I just graduated Placer High School.
I'm Juan Rojas. I'm 16, and I will be a junior next year.
I'm Pastor Casey Tinnen, and I'm leading this crazy crew.
My name is Jackson Charles, and I'm 16, and I'm going to be a senior next year at Placer High.
My name is Adrian Kendice, and I just graduated from Placer, and I'm 18.
I'm Emily Pruitt, and I will be a junior in high school.
I'm Shelby Kendice, and I'm 15, and I'll be a sophomore.
Wow. Don't they call it Placer Union High School anymore?
They just call it Placer High School.
That long ago, huh? Okay.
Pastor Brian Eklund, just happy to be back again on the Qumran Report. Thank you so much for inviting us to be here.
Well, can you tell us a little about our listening audience, a little about the group and the program you run?
Sure. You know, this is the continuation for New City Parish, the coalition of eight congregations that formed after the civil unrest in 1992, of one of our really standards, we call it the four legs of our table, and that is that we want to raise consciousness about our community from South Central down through downtown, Skid Row, to help others from outside as well as those who live here to understand more deeply some of the issues that we face in our communities. Mm-hmm. But also to see some of the positive things that we're doing to turn those issues from negatives to positives.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, we know we're going to hear from some of the young voices on their thoughts on what it takes to achieve peace in this day and age, especially in light of what would make a young man go into a church Bible study class and kill 9 people. And we know that's been on the national news. Maybe I'm going to ask the pastor to tell us about that, and then we get some comments from the students.
Yeah, so last Wednesday, pastor and congregants were sitting together in Bible study, African-American congregation, and a young white man came in and sat down. He was greeted. He was welcomed, invited into the conversation. They had a full conversation, a full Bible study. And at the end, he pulled out a gun and started shooting, mm-hmm. And killed 9 people and injured quite a few. Mm-hmm. The interesting thing from the perspective of this group is that the pastor of that congregation was an alum of an ELCA seminary, and the man who was shooting was an ELCA member. Mm. And so it hits the
ELCA.
Evangelical Lutheran Church of America. Mm-hmm. And so it hits even closer for us as Lutherans, as members of this body, as we begin to talk about race and begin to talk about issues around this.
So that's amazing. So Dylan Root, he was also a member of the organization of the church.
He was a mm-hmm. Lutheran, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I know the pastor was also a state senator. And the pastor of the church. Now, let me ask you this for the other pastors in the room. Isn't it the responsibility of the deacons, according to the scripture, to provide security in the churches? Isn't that part of their responsibility? According to the scripture that's laid out in the Bible.
It's interesting. That's not something that we ever really considered in all mm-hmm. my years of serving in a church in South Central Melbourne. We were always just, I guess we just had the kind of faith that everything was going to be all right. And except for having our windows shot out one New Year's Eve when we were doing the New Year's watch, it was a pretty it was a pretty safe situation. So it was not a consideration for us. And I doubt that most of our churches really would even think of something like that possibly happening in their congregations.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's go around some comments from the students. Who want to start off talking about this?
Well, it was a bit of a, you know, it's kind of like the situation, like you hear a lot of bad stuff around the world, but, you know, it's, when you hear about, like, some random guy coming right in, you know, instantly welcome, and then all of a sudden, you know, you think nothing of it. You know, he seems like a nice guy, but then all of a sudden the whole mood changes when he takes out the gun. And it really, it kind of hurts a lot, you know, to hear something like that. Especially, you know, I like people, and it hurts to hear something like that.
And the age range, because I think one of the ladies was 87 and 74. Mm-hmm. And I think it was six females and three males. I think that was part of it. Mm-hmm. Any more comments? What are your thoughts on it?
Mm-hmm. Pastor, I just want to respond to what you were saying earlier. And I think that I won't do a lot of talking tonight because preachers can preach, right? Mm-hmm. But especially around this issue, when we, as you said earlier, you know, it's something we haven't thought about. And I think especially as a pastor in the ELCA and as a youth pastor, I mean, this is an issue that at some level I don't think that we have thought about, right? We have sort of avoided it and played it nice. And I think that happens culturally. That and so this is an opportunity for us to really respond and say, look, here's our chance to really talk about issues, because Lutherans are predominantly, I mean, it's pretty white, right? And for this is a chance for us to come together.
And indeed to think about those issues, to think about the level of security of all of our brothers and sisters. That's really right. In not only in parishes, but how can we not think of all the mosques around the world in which this damage is done on a daily basis, right? And more. People are gathered for a funeral to say goodbye to someone, and 80 people are blown up. I mean, it's really time for the faith community to take a deep look at who we are and what we believe, and to adapt and make the kinds of changes we need to make to reach out to one another, to lift each other up. In the case of this young man who seems to be a loner, to look for ways that we can outreach and help some of these youngsters.
Mm-hmm. And any more comments about it? Because I want to talk about another issue. We also train military veterans in what we call the Anti-Violent Situation Coping Group. And we just train a group of military veterans to go into the Miller School. Which one? Los Angeles Miller School? And they went in to train youngsters how to set up anti-violent situation coping groups as conflict resolution groups. And we found now that one of the major problems in high school that go all the way back to the youngsters is the whole concept of bullying, you know, especially a new element that came into play is cyber bullying also. But what are your thoughts on bullying in high school, the effects of bullying and all of that?
Well, you know, when you hear, like, cyberbullying is, like, the number one, you know, cause of bullying. And every time I see bullying, it kind of, you know, don't you know what that kid's going through? Like, that kid's going to be, like, you know, grow up with, you know, thoughts in his head that he's nothing and, you know, come out something that he's not, and, you know, it's going to hurt him mentally, and because being mentally, you know, bullied is, you know, way worse than just getting, you know, beat up, and so it's like, once you're, you know, you got all these thoughts in your head, you're going to get, like, you know, some kind of suicide thoughts, and, you know, all kinds of stuff, and you're going to be mentally, you know, damaged.
And as a matter of fact, they had a study in England that just came out maybe a couple of months ago where they determined that bullying do more harm than domestic violence. And I was surprised to see that, but they had all of the results and stuff like that. And one of the things that we discovered in our discussion is that they put so much attention on the person that's doing the bullying and the person that being bullying. And we found out that the most important element is that third segment that allow it to happen. You know, we can even transition that to what we see in Skid Row. You know, like L.A., it's a homeless capital, but at the same time, you probably got more millionaires than anywhere else in the United States. It's a real wealthy area, but people will drive through. You know, they stop at the light and they may look around. They can't wait till the light turns green so they can continue to ride on through. And we think it's the same thing with bullying. The person that look at this and allow it to happen and feel that it's not part of their job to do something about it. Anybody else want to comment on bullying?
So my freshman year, I came out as gay. And okay. It just being on the other side of being like bullied and stuff, it made me really think about myself and if I was doing something wrong or if I was, you know, not being where I was supposed to be because of everyone, you know, walking the other way around me or whispering as I walked by. And so.
Mm-hmm. And what grade are you at now?
I'll be a junior.
Mm-hmm. And how did you deal with it?
I found this group.
A support system.
Yeah, support system. And these people really, you know, accepted me and made me, you know, be more confident in myself to where I was okay with it.
Mm-hmm.
I know how, like, how the bullies feel, but how the people on the other side feel. Because elementary school all the way to about freshman year, I've been on the bullying side, and it's not the greatest feeling in the world because I'm not the biggest kid, and so you know, when like you said, with you know, it's not just the bullying person or the person who's being bullied; it's people who allow it, and you know that right there, the people who are not acting up and stepping forward, you know, they're just as much of a bully as the person who's doing the bullying themselves, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like it's not just one person, it's everybody that's around, you know, whether you hear about it or you see it, you know, you're part of it. Mm-hmm. So.
Okay. Anybody else want to say anything about that? Now, Pastor Brian, the pastors, what are some of the solutions? What do you suggest when a person is dealing, when a young person is dealing with that?
So one of the things that I always remind my young people is that hurt people hurt people. That the bullies are responding out of their own brokenness and hurt. And it doesn't make it better. It doesn't make it right. It doesn't justify the pain. But for me, when these young people come into my office and talk about the things that are happening in their life, I try to remind them that, first of all, they have a safe place, right? That they are safe here and they can come as they are, that we're not going to blink. I think that's one of the big things is for a generation that has said that they are more connected, right, through Facebook and Instagram and all of these things, they're not connected at all. They don't know how to interact socially together without their phones.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have really worked hard to make it a safe place for them to be able to say whatever they need to say and be right where they are. And I pray that it's working.
Mm-hmm.
And that when they do come in and they are being bullied, I remind them that that person's working out of their own pain and brokenness, right? And so it doesn't permit the bullying, but it says, you're safe here, and let's think about why these people are responding the way they're responding.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
And how can we together support you to make it end?
Mm-hmm.
I really have to admire, you know, Pastor Casey, too, up in... Here's a church that's up in a more rural area and community in Northern California, and we've found some connections with ourselves because over the years it was exactly what we found ourselves doing in the urban core. We raised the question: how can we create a space that in which our young people feel safe, and in which they can express themselves and be who they want to be? The result of that was an explosive flowering, like the desert blooms in the spring. Mm-hmm. And it was a wonderful thing to see our young people in moving forward with their lives because they had a place that they could call home, a place that was that they could just be accepted as they were. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a critical piece. And I really do translate that, Melvin, to the situation with our homeless population with Skid Row. I just see the same thing that these are the same people that walk by a bullying situation are the people that are going to drive through Skid Row without looking. Mm-hmm. And so we have to just continue to work with this whole, in Spanish we call the word concienciación, or consciousness raising awareness amongst one another so that we can see the light, we can see the good, we can see the blessings around us and in other people.
Mm-hmm. What do you think the responsibility of the parents in relationship to teaching their kids how to deal with bullying and to avoid being a bully?
I think the parents, just really need to be there for the child. I don't think there's much that they can do. But if you have the support group, especially your parents who love you and who've raised you, or people you see as your parents, I think that is the most influential thing for anyone going through bullying.
Mm-hmm. The parents just need to be aware that their child is being bullied, because when I was being bullied in elementary school and middle school, my parents never really knew because I never felt the point to tell them because my parents were always at work and they were always doing stuff and they were always busy. So, you know, I didn't have someone to tell it to. So they just have to make sure that the parents, that they know what's going on in their child's life, and then they know if the child is being bullied or not.
Mm-hmm. Why do you think you see so much bullying in the... That's one of the things that surprised me, to see so much bullying in the early ages.
Mm-hmm. Like, being bullied... Bullying happens everywhere. You know, it doesn't matter where you are. You could be in a small town. You could be in a big city. It doesn't really matter. It can happen anywhere. And one thing, I also noticed that the bully is also being bullied by either their parents or their brothers, and so they, in their minds, they think, oh, I'm going to pick on this other weaker person, and because, you know, just to make himself feel better.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I'd also like to go back to what Brandon said, and that the bullies are being bullied, and it's the point that when kids are little, they don't really truly understand how other people feel, and they don't have the whole concept of, like, everyone has their own mind and that everyone is feeling stuff and what they say actually matters to other people. And so the point is that anyone can say anything and it can affect anyone, and that's how bullies are created. So when bullies become bullies, they're not, you know, totally self-conscious that they are bullies, and so they just say stuff and it happens and it's an endless cycle.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I feel. What's wrong with the problem of cyberbullying? A lot of the times that cyberbullying happens, you don't even know that you're doing it, which is the worst part.
Mm-hmm. Can you talk about that a little bit more? Yeah.
If somebody fell out of their chair in class and everybody started talking about it behind their back, and this kid was really self-conscious about anything that happened to him or her, they would feel really bad because everybody would be talking about it, and everybody wouldn't even know that they were doing this. It's not something everybody can control, but you really have to pay attention to what you're doing or saying because it could hurt people.
Mm-hmm. What? Go ahead.
Another thing about cyberbullying I'd like to add is that the whole problem about it is that it's literally everywhere, and the internet makes it so much more easier for it to happen. And whenever you say something, it just gets out there so fast that no one really knows that it's out there. Like, you could say something and the person you say something about would not even know that it's out there, and other people can know that. And one of the worst parts is that a lot of things that you can say anonymously on the internet. So for instance, there was a thing called ask.fm. And it's basically you set up a profile and people ask you questions. And for a while there, they had the option to ask anonymously. And so people would ask very, you know, very rude, painful, personal questions anonymously. And then, you know, sometimes they would say statements and that would hurt. And they chose to take that option off because of how many hurtful comments were made.
Mm-hmm. What do you think the steps when someone is being, especially a young person, experiencing cyberbullying? What's the first step you think they should take?
Well, I think the first step, they should, you know, they need to tell their parents one mm-hmm. thing. But if you can't tell your parents or tell like a good friend or tell a teacher or anybody that you trust, you know, uncle, it doesn't matter who it is. You know, if you trust that person, you got to, you know, say something because, mm-hmm. you know, if you keep it hidden, it's going to eat you alive.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Any more comments on
Another way to sort of cure yourself of it is to just get rid of the social media that it's prevailing on. So if you had, you know, Ask FM and you're getting all these negative comments, get rid of the account and then it goes away.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You know, I thought one of the most amazing things that came out of the tragic situation was the response of the family members who really, exemplified the concept of forgiveness in terms of, and they even kind of saw this young man as a victim, because I think it's plenty little young men out there like that we need to reach. We need to figure out why an individual would feel, a young man, a lot of them pretty close to your age, that can feel that he can find himself where he had to take a tragic situation like that, because his life is basically over for making, he got a lot of time to think about this now. But let's go to the other topic I want to talk about, something that you experienced today, and I want to get your response from it, and that's Skid Row, the homeless. It was grateful to see you come down and bring some hygiene kits and interact with the community members down there. But what are your thoughts on Skid Row? Anybody want to pick that up?
First, I'd like to just say that it was impacting because, I mean, you know, if you've ever been into a big city, you've always seen people who are homeless and you've always seen them around. And maybe, you know, having their own little, you know, spot or corner that they usually lay down. And then maybe you'll see groups of them. But, like, that many people in just in the area at once, it was just very impacting because you don't see that a lot.
Mm-hmm. And I kind of noticed that, there are so many that it's bigger than, you know, the place I live in. And, you know, just imagine that in just one little spot area of homeless people. And I really kind of broke my heart a little bit. You know, there's like these people really need help. You know, they need medical care or mm-hmm. anything that they need. And, you know, it's kind of heartbroken that, you know, nobody's, you know, there's some people that are helping, but, you know, we need more, mm-hmm. to be honest.
Okay.
Adding on to what Brandon said, I think a lot of the same things occur because coming from a lot of people in this room came from a town of just 16,000 people, and going there where there's over around 25,000 homeless people, it's insane. You can't really take all that in at once. It's just crazy how much stuff can change over your life without even thinking about it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What do you, anybody else want to comment on? What are your thoughts when you come down to Skid Row?
I think the worst part was less than 30 minutes away, walking is one of the richest areas ever as well. Mm-hmm. And nothing's being done by them. You know, they have money to spare.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And do you know how much money the city put into the homeless last year? $118 million. That was the price tag on the homeless. And instead of decrease, we had an increase. Yeah, especially down in the Skid Row area in terms of encampments, in terms of the tents and stuff. They had an 85% increase on there. And I always say that, you know, this is the communities in the world that the young people is getting ready to experience, and they're getting ready to turn it over to you guys. What do you think are some of the solutions in terms of solving the homeless problem?
I think Medicare is the big, you know, they need Medicare, because some people, like, I saw, like, a few people, they have, like, mental illness, sickness, probably have cancer, too, also. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and there's no hospitals around, and it's, you know, we need more hospitals, because, mm-hmm. you know, there's, you know, like, a hospital that, like, really far, like, if you got, like, a, you know, a wounded arm or you have a heart attack coming in, you're pretty much, you're done, and, you know, mm-hmm. your life is done. That's why the, you know, the age is, you know, you don't live very long, and it's sad. You okay. know, it's the reality, you know.
You know, adding on to what Brandon said, you always hear about a lot of other countries and their Medicare and how it's free. And, you know, whenever you talk to someone about that, they always say, oh, yeah, the taxes are higher, though. But it's just the fact that the Medicare is free. So, you know, we never consider these people, like the homeless people, and they're going to need this Medicare. And if we had free Medicare, they would be able to go in and they would be able to, you know, fix themselves and get fixed and, you know, get treated with sicknesses. So we need to consider that.
Mm-hmm. I'd also like to add on too, like, I feel Medicare is a big a big problem for them, but I feel like if they had a solid structure over their head, besides, you know, sleeping on the streets with a tent, you know, if they had a solid structure that they know that they could go to every single day, every night, anytime, you know, like, not mm-hmm. not necessarily a house or an apartment, but just, you know, like even just a fort, you know, it'll give them time. It'll relieve stress off them, you know, because that's one less thing they got to worry about. And mm-hmm. when you get a roof over somebody's head, you know, that gives them time to recollect, and they'll be able to get their life back on track from there.
Mm-hmm. Anybody else want
to? Yeah, just to add on what Juan said, you know, yeah, that is also they need housing. And if they have housing and they're under their roof, they can, you know, get their life back on, maybe get their life back on track if they want to, if they choose it.
Mm-hmm.
But, and, you know, they could, you know, get a job. And, you know, it might not be a good one, but, you know, you got a job that, you know, can help you a little bit, you know. And who knows, you might end up helping the community yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, you got something.
Well, how about the church responsibility? Because, you know, one of the, when the Messiah Jesus, you know, part of announcing his messiahship, you know, he was quoting from the book of Isaiah, and he clearly mentioned the poor. He mentioned the people coming out of prison. You know, that this was central to him. So I always felt that the church should be at the forefront of what's happening down here. And now you do have, I try to call the task of the Islamic organizations need to get more involved. Because mostly it's a lot of Christian organizations that's down in the Skid Row area trying to meet some of the needs. But what is the responsibility of the religious organization in terms of solving this problem? Especially, anybody want to pick up on that?
So I think the religious organizations should, you know, practice what they preach. It does say in the Bible to help the homeless, feed the hungry. And, you know, it's heartbreaking to think that you can call yourself a Christian or any other religious group and not help these social issues that you claim to help protect.
Mm-hmm.
We had a little experiment with our group yesterday, Sunday afternoon. We drove down through South Central LA, just on Vermont Avenue from Martin Luther King Boulevard down to around Florence to the heart of the civil unrest in 1992. And I asked some of the young people to count churches along the way. What, do you remember what the count was, anybody?
Over
was over 100.
36.
Yeah, 36. One car got 36, and another in another car they got 30. So we know that there are churches all over the place in Los Angeles. In fact, it seemed to me that I remember a count that we talked about, Melvin, that it was there were like 800 religious institutions or churches and 80,000, excuse me, 80,000 religious institutions in our city-wide area. And what would it be like if every church would actually adopt a homeless
one person,
one family, and say, we're going to take total responsibility. And that's the piece that I find is missing. It's nice that we have church groups down here feeding people and, you know, doing some good things for folks. But the really, for folks to get out of the situation, there have to be some really serious case study works, one-to-one case study. In essence, everybody needs a person or some people that they can relate to. Or as this youth group has said, what they have in their, they have a community that they can depend on. And it seems to me that every homeless person deserves and merits a community that's stable and solid that can be for them, there with them in the hard times, the good times and the bad times, to help them work their way through that process of moving from homelessness to reintegrating in back into society as best they possibly can. For all kinds of reasons, some will struggle and not be able to do that. But I think given that kind of a community, given that kind of help, and that is a place the church can absolutely be there, we could start to see a difference.
Yeah, because I remember when Pastor Murray was here in the studio, I asked him that question, and he said that he thought that every church should have a homeless component to their organizational structure. And if you notice, there was another elephant in the room. Oh, go ahead.
I just want to add, there were so many liquor stores I noticed, too. And to be honest, like, do you really need that much liquor, you know, or liquor stores? Like, it's pretty much there just, you know, to, you know, have people kill themselves. And I remember Casey told me there was a story that you know, a group of community went up to and said, you know, try to fight, you know, and say, hey, we don't want, you know, any more liquor stores. But they kind of turned them down and left wondering. And, well, I don't know if that's how it went. I don't really know the full story, but, you know.
Yeah, because we was talking about drugs just a minute ago and seeing one of the paradoxes in the Skid Row area is the fact that people concentrate on the drugs that they see on the street, like somebody might be selling some crack or some marijuana or whatever like that. But the biggest drug dealers is the pharmaceutical companies because, see, they use an area like Skid Row and they get, what do they call the drugs? The generic drugs, free, see. And the reason they do that is because they have a controlled population where they can test, these particular drugs over a period of time. And then you see a lot of these mentally ill people that might be on three or four different kind of medication. And they would study the medication. They would study one medication for the side effects, but they very seldom study the combination of the side effects. Let me ask you this, because if you notice, a big elephant in the room down in the Skid Row area, in the conversation that a lot of people want to talk about, and this will lead us into our discussion about race, is the fact that about 85 or 90% of the population that you see in Skid Row is African Americans. Now, African Americans make up probably what? 9-10% of the population of Los Angeles.
That's right.
So it should always, why do we have 85% African Americans living down there in the tents and in the Skid Row areas and also the prison population? But I want to lead into, what are your thoughts on the racial problem? And I know the dynamics is probably different up north, you know, in the high school in Auburn, in Woodland, you know, Sacramento areas like that. Sacramento probably have a different kind of racial mix up. What are your thoughts on the racial problems or race in America? Anybody want to pick up on that?
Well, it's really hard for this group to really understand any racial tensions. The city of Auburn, the demographics is less than 1% African-American. And it's just something we don't see. It's a very, very white town.
Mm-hmm.
You see, I think our high school is 20% Mexican-American, and the rest is white Europeans.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really hard for this group to really get a grasp on any racial tensions mm-hmm. that exist in America because we're just secluded from it.
Mm-hmm. Great point.
Kind of want to add what Cody said, you know, yeah, it is true that we, you know, we don't understand this, you know, kind of thing, you know. And it's, you know, it's tough to grasp, you know, the whole situation of seeing so many African Americans, you know, just laying down on the streets.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and what really bothers me is that, you know, like, there's rich people, too, that can, they can pitch in a couple bucks, you know, just to, you know, help them. You know, it's hard, you know, broken. Mm-hmm. You know, it's kind of hard to, you know, grasp the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
Going back to what Cody said about, you know, people in Auburn not exactly feeling the whole racial problem. I mean, yeah, it's mostly true because I myself, I haven't lived in Auburn my whole life. I just moved up here last year. But before then, I was living in North Highlands and Sacramento, Rio Linda area. And down there, it's completely different because the population is up to about 500,000. And, you know, compared to Auburn, that's like a little neighborhood. So,
mm-hmm.
You know, each neighborhood in Sacramento that I've lived in, it's been different. Like, I've lived in ones that are dominantly Mexicans and then or Latinos, and then I've lived in some where, you know, it's African-Americans. And it's not necessarily where there's still racial issues. It's just, it's more prejudice problems going on, you know. It's not like, it's still out there and it's still big, but it's a problem that is still happening here in 2015. You know, you would think that everything would be under control or at least, you know, on a settled agreement, but you know, it's still hard, and not necessarily just for the blacks or just for you know, the Mexicans. You know, there's other cultures out there that are, you know, feeling the same thing too. So it's not just a single race out there. It's mm-hmm. it's everyone together, you know.
Okay.
Yeah, and I just want to add, you know, I don't want to imagine this, but you know, you know, kids, you know, I saw like schools, they were being barred. You know, there's bars. It's kind of like living in a prison, kind of.
Mm-hmm. It's not like that up in Auburn.
No, it's not.
God, no.
Yeah.
Yeah, we talk about that all the time.
Yeah.
All of us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's, yeah, it's kind of like living in a prison, you know. I just saw it, and I don't want to imagine just every day living in fear, like, hey, you know, this could be my last day to, you know, to live, or... You know, I'm afraid to go outside and, you know, it could be, you know, somebody coming right at me or anything can happen. It's kind of like living in a battlefield, kind of.
What? How about the gang situation up there in Auburn?
What gang?
Yeah, what gang? Yeah, yeah, there's...
I want to... This is a good teaching moment.
Mm-hmm.
For me to say, Cody, you said, you know, we don't feel those racial tensions. But you can say that as a white young man, right? I mean, but if you ask your Latino friends or your Asian friends, they will tell you something mm-hmm. probably completely different. And I think that I even as someone who grew up in a predominantly Latino community and living closer to Auburn and working there, I mean, When you talk to people, it's, oh, we're not racist here. We're not racist. But it's easy to say that when you live in a community that predominantly is white. And so I think that the assumption, right? I mean, when we talk about the shooting, my young people are appalled because that's not the world, sadly, that they live in. They have blinders on. And so a part of being here and a part of helping them have these experiences is so that they can, these blinders and lenses can be removed, mm-hmm. and that they can see the world more clearly and more directly, so that they can have these sorts of conversations, mm-hmm. and to begin to deconstruct in their back in Auburn, and hopefully in the rest of their lives deconstruct some of this. I mean, I think that is my hope, and mm-hmm. that's what we should continue to do, is to show up and to say these are the harsh realities for people of color. Mm-hmm. This is disproportionately what is happening in our country. And this is our, and we are a part of that. And how do we deconstruct that? And so, I mean, that's...
Mm-hmm. Beautiful.
So. Mm-hmm.
Cutting back on the whole gang thing, I used to live in this area called the Auburn Greens, which is predominantly Mexican. And, it's like if you get out of the Auburn Greens and you drive up north, it just goes back to white. So it's like going down a skid row and going up to the, mm-hmm. going up to downtown Los Angeles. It's like, it's a totally huge difference because you don't see much Mexicans up in the north part of Auburn. Mm-hmm. But when you go back down to the Auburn Greens, there's predominantly Mexican. And I used to live out in the Greens for a couple years, and there was talk that there was a gang. I don't know, but they said there was some shooting. There was helicopters sometimes going around my neighborhood, and or graffiti on the playgrounds. I don't know, but mm-hmm. I'm not a big old expert on it. But there is some Mexicans that are out there, but I don't think they're out there anymore because of the whole ICE thing. Mm-hmm. Like I think it was about summers ago. There used to be like an undercover black cop car, and they would know that, oh, it's summertime, so this is going to be a good day to like get Mexicans and like deport them or ask them for their papers and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people knew that they had to stay inside, so it was really quiet. The parks were all empty. They were always inside, and this was like a call, like, oh, we don't think we should hang out at this time because, oh, they must be looking around the neighborhood to get whoever is. Or if they're Mexican, we're just going to be like, hey, do you have papers? And if they like don't respond in English or whatever, they'll just like take them on the spot.
Yeah, and that's one of the major problems down here is families dealing with that whole immigration issues.
Mm-hmm. I was going to add on to the gang thing, too. Back then, too, like back in the 70s and 80s, you know, there was really only... There wasn't as many gangs as there are now, and that's what I feel like with now. It's more of a problem with like wondering what gangs are out there, because there's gangs no one's ever heard of, but they're, you know, those are the ones we should fear the most, because you know you don't know what they look like, who they are, what kind of race they're coming from, you know. Mm-hmm. So you know the ones that you know are just being formed or are recently new, you know, that aren't primarily known in areas like L.A. or Sacramento or any major gang capital of the world, you know, it's different. You know, like in Salinas, back when my dad was growing up, you know, that was the number one murder capital in the U.S. And, you know, it was primarily two gangs, you know. Mm-hmm. And now it's completely different if you go back down there, you know. I mean, it's still high up there with the murder rate, but, you know, everything's changing, you know, as we advance and everything that we do now, you know, it's, you know, so does everybody else. And so I think the ones that we don't see out there are the ones that we should fear the most.
Yeah, and we're dealing with, as a matter of fact, we got a program tomorrow up in Pasadena, and we got this piece called If the Shoe Fits, and it's about solitary confinements. It's about a lot of the little young gang members who went in during the 90s, and now they're 45 and 50s, and most of the that go through there end up in solitary confinement because of the gang thing. And it's a lot of stress, drive most of them crazy. But what I want to get into, we're starting to go around. I'm interested, especially hearing from a couple more of the young ladies over here. I want to know, what are your future plans? You know, what do you got lined up for the future? You want to start over here? What do you got planned for the future? What do you want to be? What do you want? You want doctor, lawyers, actors?
Radio announcers?
No. I plan to be a physical therapist.
Mm-hmm.
I want to go to school because I went through a lot of physical therapy with, like, my legs and stuff. And so I think physical therapy would be an amazing thing to be able to help people that.
Great field, yeah. Too. How about you?
Okay. So I've always wanted to be, like, a teacher because, like, I have so many little siblings, and I just love teaching them about, like, what I'm going through or, like, how middle school or elementary school is so much different from high school or, like, college or something like that, or, like, the grown-ups that I've grown up with.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, my dad recently got his two kids back from their mom, and so I've had to teach them about, like, what school is and, like, how to read, and, like, that's just, like, something that I love doing. So.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, what are your future plans? What do you
mean? Well, I know I'm going to school, and that's, like, where I'll figure everything out, but I've always had, like, interests in music and sciences and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't really...
You're a musician already?
I play a little guitar, mm-hmm. but that's about it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I see the pink floor.
Gotcha.
Right now, I have plans for college and therefore after, but basically I don't know what I want to get into, but something that has to do with math and sciences.
Mm-hmm.
My future plans is to be like Pastor Brian.
Okay.
Yes.
I plan on getting out of high school, graduating high school first of all, and then going straight to a 4-year university, and try to stay in California. If not, you know, do what I got to do. But I'm trying to go into like a recreational type of area, like a recreational park ranger, you know. Mm-hmm. Fish and game warden. That's primarily what I'm trying to be, you know. Okay. Out there more hands-on. I'm not trying to be like stuck behind a desk, you know, working 8 to 5. So okay. I'd rather be out there with the program. So
okay, graduated high school, okay, college. What I'm focusing on is psychology and sociology. Psychology and mostly for the adolescent mind, and sociology because I like to help people. Mm-hmm. And
good for you.
And vocal performance because I like to sing because I was in choir in high school.
Mm.
Okay.
So I want to be a videographer and create films, sort of exposing some of the stuff that we saw today.
So you want to be a filmmaker?
Yeah.
What I want to do is I want to go to Sierra College. They have a really good RN program there. And before I get into any RN programs, I'd want to go into an EMT program because I feel like that'd be what would be most suited for me.
Okay, wonderful.
Right now, I'm looking into going into a computer science program, but that's pretty flexible. I'm not super committed. Pretty much anything with math is what I'm looking at. But
okay. And we wind it down. We got a little over a minute, but
Right now I'm kind of debating either photography or music.
Mm-hmm.
I love photography. I like making captions and seeing the view of the world.
And you're a musician too?
Yes, I'm a musician. I also sang with Alfonso. We sang together. Yeah. I am looking forward to music. I'm planning on going to Sierra College. Well, I'm not going to choir music because I heard it's not that good. But
okay, look, we got about 30 seconds to go. Where Pastor Brian can get you to say about 10 seconds worth.
10 seconds worth. I just wanted to comment on how interesting it is to see this theme of bullying brought up, Melvin, as these young people are experiencing it here, but also tied in with racism, because isn't it the same thing? People who don't feel good about themselves are putting down other people. because of their race. Mm-hmm. And so it's really another style of bullying, and it's something that we need to really be conscious of in our culture.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you very much. We could have went on for another hour here. Now, I would like to extend a special thanks to Pastor Brian from New City Parish and the student from Placer High School. Please listen to past shows of the Qumran Report by Googling in Qumran Report. Thank you for tuning in to the Qumran Report, and from your host, Melvin Ishmael Johnson, co-host Earlene Anthony, may the peace and blessings of the life-giving creative spirit be upon you and upon your family. I leave you with the video, I Dream of Peace by Deborah Penberthy.
Found this letter, it was written 20 years ago, written by a girl whose face I know. Still I wonder, well, maybe I'm not as good as I thought. It said things are peace. Clear day, branches of snow.